You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Gonna take it.
Two legends in basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't going to happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
All right, welcome in another episode of the Ryan and Goodman podcast. He's Bob Ryan, I'm Jeff Goodman, and we've got the NBA playoffs in the rearview mirror, Bob, but that doesn't mean there's not things to talk about.
Oh.
We've got a new coaching hire, Bob, and you know exactly who Nate Bjorkgren is. You know him. You know his whole resume. You can write his bio. Nate Bjorkgren. I hope
right
I'm saying it correctly.
Right now, I could. 24 hours ago, I couldn't. I'll be totally honest. That one utterly blindsided me. I did not know of his existence on this earth. I did not know him as an assistant in Phoenix. I did not know him as an assistant in Toronto. I did not know him. But what I did find out, I've done some research.
Okay. He's done your digging.
He's a Nick Nurse guy.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's from Storm Center, Storm Lake, Iowa. Not to be confused with Clear Lake, that's where the music died on February 2nd, 1959. 59, in case you're wondering.
I have no idea what that means, Bob. What does that
mean?
That's the Buddy Holly,
okay. Big Bopper,
okay.
Richie Valens. That's where they died, in Clear Lake, Iowa, but
really?
Not Storm Lake. I was confused. I thought it was the same place. All right. Nate Bjorkgren. He is a nurse guy,
yep.
And I happen to be in Iowa, in Des Moines, the day that Nick Nurse was introduced as the coach of the Iowa Energy in 2007.
All right. Really?
In fact, I was on the broadcast. Yeah. And don't ask. That's another story. We'll do that for another day. But anyway, his resume, Iowa Energy, Dakota, Iowa again, Bakersfield. And then he got into with the Suns in 15 and then Toronto with this man, Nurse. Fun part. He went to, after he left his first college, he went to back home to Buena Vista University. Did you know about Buena Vista University?
I have no idea, Bob. I didn't know it.
I'm not making fun of him at all. Seriously, I don't want to do that. No, it's a school founded in the mid-19th century by the Presbyterians. And it started out, the first building was the Opera House in downtown Buena Vista. And here's a couple of alums.
Okay, Buena Vista.
Athletic alums. Jim Doran is a name that I remember from the Lions in the 50s. Jim Fanning was the first general manager of the Montreal Expos.
Okay.
And it was a noted baseball executive. And I must admit, I missed Jesse Schmidt, a wide receiver of the Iowa Barnstormers of the Arena Football League. So there's some of their alums. And
so will Nate Bjorkgren go down as the greatest and most successful person ever to come out of Buena Vista?
Well, the leader in the clubhouse is Fanning. And of course, Doran was a successful player. Yeah. But you know what? This follows the recent pattern of faceless, analytics driven, I'm sure, coaches in the league. The old formula is dead. Now I'm going to do something. You'll love this.
Okay.
Still a little research. Okay. Started covering the league in 1969. 14-team league.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 11 of the coaches were former players.
Wow. 11 of the
including Butch Von Bredekoff. I'm counting. He played in the NBA briefly for the Knicks in 1947.
Yep.
I'm just giving you some of these names. You could put it, okay. Guerin, Richie Guerin with the Hawks. Gene Shue was the Bullets. Tommy Heinsohn with the Celtics. Paul Seymour, who with the Detroit Pistons. He had been a Syracuse Nat when they won the championship.
Okay.
Butch Van Bredekoff, Larry Costello, pretty good player. Red Holtzman, of course, had been a player. He was on his 51 championship Rochester Royals. Johnny Kerr, Johnny Red Carter, maybe the greatest passing center of them all. Jack McMahon, who had been a guard with the Hawks. George Lee was a sub with the he was the coach of the Warriors, and he had been a you know, and yep. Al Bianchi, who was a longtime NBA player. That was the general formula to become a coach in the NBA in those days. 10 years later.
Yeah. How many?
We're still player centric. All right. Jerry Sloan, Al Addles, Bob Leonard, Don Nelson, Kevin Lockery, Red Holtzman, Billy Cunningham, Doug Moe, Gene Shue, Lenny Wilkins, all former pros. So there's 10 NBA coaches, okay. Former players who are coaches. Today?
Yeah, how many?
I didn't do today. Tell me, let's go over our head. But there aren't many.
Yeah,
Doc Rivers.
Doc Rivers, Ty Lue.
Mike D'Antoni.
I mean, there are some, but yeah, you're right. It feels like some of the old players are being recirculated. Again, the Doc Riverses, the Ty Lues. But it's a lot more of, if you're an assistant for a successful NBA franchise, San Antonio was obviously a big one, right? I mean, they were guys going left and right that were assistant coaches for Pop. Now, is it something where, Toronto, obviously, to me, Nick Nurse has done as good a job as anybody in the NBA over the last two seasons. You can't even dispute that.
The formula, the biggest way to get to be an NBA coach right now is to be a technician, a guy in any organization and work your way up. You don't have to have any college credential. You don't have to have any pro credential. Here's some of the names in the NBA who could all walk down the street, any street in America, including the one in the city where they work.
Well, I'd love to have these guys in front of you, Bob, and you try to pick out who's who. That would be – honestly, we should do that. We should try to get you pictures of all these guys and see if you could correctly identify how many you could do.
Now, since I wrote an article about this in January in Basketball Times, three of them have gotten their heads lopped off.
Okay.
Here are some of the names, though, as of January as of the end of the season.
Yep.
As of May – excuse me, the end of the season is in September.
Go ahead.
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
Brett Brown.
Yep, gone.
Mike Miller, Kenny Atkinson, Steve Clifford, James Borrego, Lloyd Pierce, Mike Budenholzer, Mike Malone, Ryan Saunders, and Jim Boylan. I said they all could be in some sort of coach's witness protection program.
Yeah, and you're not kidding.
They all apprentice one way or the other in these organizations. Now, who is the poster child for this whole thing? Guess who? The two guys who just played for the NBA championship.
Yeah.
Frank Vogel. Who's Frank Vogel?
Video coordinator years ago.
He was a Celtic video coordinator.
Right. That's
who's
right.
Eric Spoelstra?
Yeah.
He was a Heat fan. He's going to be a Heat lifer.
Wasn't it the battle of the video coordinators?
Yes. This is how you get to be a coach. You pay your dues in that regard.
Study, Bob. I would love to see a study for which group has been more successful. Now, again, it's hard because some guys get better jobs, right? So the former players get better jobs than, because people rip on the college coaches who go to the NBA. And I always say, it's not really fair because most college coaches who go to the NBA don't get very good jobs. You know, like Stevens got a great franchise, not a great job at that point. I mean, they were terrible.
He lost 18 straight.
Right. I mean, Billy Donovan, you know, obviously he had Westbrook and KD when he went there. So it's not really apples to apples when you try to compare, but I would love to see, again, the success rate overall of the former player as opposed to the non-player.
I think the biggest interesting transition is away. you know, that we had a period of time starting in roughly 1968 when college coaches were starting to creep into the NBA. Dick Motta, Cotton Fitzsimmons, Bill Fitch, that crop came in. Dr. Jack had been a GM, interim. You know, he was the GM of the 67 championship 76ers after his fabulously successful career at St. Joe's. So does he qualify as a college guy? He had a pro. Okay. But that was a good avenue to get in. Did I mention Dick Motta, who was plucked out of Weber State when no one knew what Weber State was at that time? Dick Motta. That was the way to go for a book. Butch Vavrinikov out of Princeton, who went to the Lakers and then later coached the Pistons and the Jazz. Okay. And then they had varying degrees of success. The only one who ever won a championship, you know, Motta won with the Bullets and Fitch won with the Celtics. Right. Cotton never won. McLeod never won. Another one, John McLeod out of Oklahoma.
Do you like this or not, Bob? Do you generally, are you in favor of this? Or if you're a GM, would you go more the former player route?
Well, I just think the way it's evolved, I think there's always going to be a player who clearly has the aptitude for it, for sure. But not that many are going to want to put in their dues to do that this way. You know, yeah. No player is going to go up the ladder. He's not going to go to the video room and then work. They're going to be on an end. I don't know. I don't think there's any total right or wrong, but we know what the trend is, you know, and these guys, I don't want to insult them, but these faceless guys that have this credential, whether they worked in the CBA, now G League, or whether they.
There are a bunch of point. Listen, the one thing I'll say is looking down the list right now, you do have a bunch of former point guards or guards. Steve, let me read them to you. There are like 10. Steve Nash, Billy Donovan, Rick Carlisle, not always point guards, but whatever. Yeah. Steve Kerr, Ty Lue. I'm just scanning down here. Doc Rivers, Luke Walton played. Quinn Snyder, Scott Brooks. So there are a few, but you're right. The number, Monty Williams. So there are some guys who certainly played. But I think it's kind of a split right now. And it's interesting to see, you know, where this thing heads. I just, you know, the interesting part, and we'll focus a little bit on the Pacers now.
Yeah. Is
you get a faceless guy like this and you have a franchise that certainly underachieved a little bit the last couple of years in the playoffs, but I don't consider what they did this past year underachieving because you had Victor Oladipo coming back from the injury and you didn't have Sabonis.
Right.
So I wouldn't even have fired, to be honest, I wouldn't have fired Nate. I don't think McMillan deserved to be fired after this year.
No.
They've got some good pieces. The big key is what do you do with Oladipo? His deal is up after next year, Bob.
Yeah. And
there are some whispers that he wants out of Indiana. I don't think he's really a number one guy. I know he made the All-Star team when he was healthy 2 years ago, but
he's a nice player. Right.
But he's like not Donovan Mitchell to me. Oladipo and Donovan Mitchell are very similar to me in a sense that they can both get hot and have their unbelievable games. Neither one are incredible shooters. They're low efficiency, high volume guys that, again, I don't think they're top 10 players in the league. I think they're probably – Donovan's probably a little bit better than Vic right now, but they're probably somewhere in that 15 to 25 range, and they're better off as number two guys. But let's face it, in Utah and Indiana, you're not getting a number one guy. You're not getting a free agent who's going to be a number one guy to come there to play alongside those guys. So they're almost forced to be number one guys, and they're not good enough to do that.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad because I just flashed across my head. I was harping for years on the fact that the Celtics could not attract a prime of life free agent and didn't get one. Until Al Horford.
Yeah.
And the only reason they got, Ray Allen was conscripted. He was traded for. And Kevin KG, I'll go there now.
Right.
You know, he had options. Yep. He had his in control. I'll go there to play with KG and Paul Pierce. They couldn't get one. They finally got one. I don't know how many of those other old cold cities or those other undesirable, those lesser, off the radar cities have ever attracted any prime free agents either, whether it's Milwaukee, you know, because boy, there's the big one coming up. We all know everybody in the league is the predators. The buzzards are flying and circling around the city of Milwaukee, right? All the NBA buzzards.
Yeah, because I think unlike Kawhi, you know, with Kawhi, you kind of knew who had a real shot with Kawhi. With Giannis, it's almost like you really don't know what he's going to do. With Kawhi, I think everybody knew he wanted to go back home. He wanted to go to L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's Lakers, Clippers, he wanted to go back home. With Kawhi, with Giannis, it's like, where does he go from here if he goes? Is he loyal? Is he loyal to Milwaukee? And maybe they can pull somebody to play with him. Ultimately, they have a number one guy. Although a lot of people after the postseason this year would say Giannis wasn't a number one guy in the playoffs because he can't shoot. And that's the key, right? All those guys I mentioned, Oladipo, Donovan Mitchell, Giannis, are not great shooters. They're streaky shooters. Giannis being
they're scorers of some type, but they're not shooters.
I think in today's NBA, to be a number one guy, kind of got to be able to shoot the basketball, don't you? I mean, LeBron may be the exception because he's not a great shooter, but he's so good at
everything. Well, we're talking now about two-time MVP and Giannis. Right. So, I mean, he is the exception maybe.
Yes. I think
there's so often exceptions to every rule, as we learned to say a long time ago, you know. But as a rule, yeah.
So the Pacers, if you're the Pacers and you're Kevin Pritchard and you're trying to figure out what to do, do you keep this core together of Oladipo? Mm-hmm. You put Sabonis back in. Do you roll the dice this year, or do you trade Oladipo for what you can get now? Because otherwise, he could leave you high and dry a year from now.
Well, the East is still not. It's still available, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
You know, Miami deserved everything they got, but I mean, they're not a scare. You're not scared of them. Right. There's nobody to be scared of. Milwaukee's been proven to be flawed to, and you know. Charmingly flawed, you know, shall we say, you know, and they can be had, as we know. We found that out. The Celtics are, you know, they need something else to go.
Nobody's great. Next step. Nobody. So, there's no separation in the East to me, you know.
No, there isn't much. I think you can throw pretty much of a blanket over those teams we just discussed. And
so you roll the dice. You roll the dice one more year with this group and see if maybe they're healthy enough. And collectively, I mean, they've got a good bench. They're deep. You know, again, without Oladipo, I thought they played pretty well for the most part this past season. And then, again, you take Sabonis off that team too.
Yeah.
You and I are probably the two biggest Domas Sabonis fans on the planet. It changes the entire – to me, it changes the entire series for the Pacers. They're not overwhelmed up front by Bam Adebayo and Miami. So, all right, before we go on to the other coaching changes, so can I read you who the biggest, do you know who the biggest free agent is this year?
No.
Have you looked at this?
Go ahead.
So Anthony Davis is going to probably, you know, he's going to stay with the Lakers. We know that. Yeah. Brandon Ingram's restricted. They're going to match whatever it is from New Orleans. You know, Gordon Hayward's got a player option. He's going to take it. And maybe Danny Ainge tries to deal him, but ultimately I think Gordon Hayward stays in Boston. The best unrestricted free agent out of this class. You ready for this one? And I love this kid. I love him. 26 years old, average 17 and 6, great defender, played on a team in which they went deep in the playoffs. They won a title 2 years ago, Robert Ryan. Can you guess who it is?
Siakam.
No, Fred VanVleet.
Oh, Fred. Love Fred.
Fred VanVleet. Fred VanVleet is the best unrestricted free agent out there for the taking.
Boy, how about that?
Which shows you a lot about this. Again, there'll be deals made. Everybody feels like Chris Paul is going to be dealt from Oklahoma City, most likely. And the interesting thing will be, Bob, could somehow LeBron James get his good buddy Chris Paul to the Lakers? I don't know how the money would work there with those three, but maybe it does. I don't know. Maybe, you know, again, if they have those three – they might need to fill out the roster with you and I rather than J.R. Smith and Deion Waiters because they're going to have no money left. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. Game spreads, totals, to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on win, division, and championship futures today. Head up to BetOnline online today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
So what do you do? You figure, how do you project Rondo next year then?
You probably
don't. What's it say about Rondo?
Chris Paul. Yeah, you probably don't. If you bring on Chris Paul, I would assume you're probably saying goodbye to Rondo. But again, I think, listen, Chris Paul and LeBron have been buddies forever. Mm-hmm. It would allow Chris Paul to maybe win a title before he hangs him up, which would be, you know, huge for him.
He'd be the Ray Bourque of basketball.
That's right. Yep. Getting one.
That's a really a good analogy, by the way.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It would be at the end of his career. He's not, although listen, Chris Paul had one hell of a year last year.
He did have a good year.
Great, great year. So, if you're Oklahoma City, you got to be careful, but you know, Fred VanVleet, Gallinari, Montrezl Harrell, these are unrestricted ones.
Really?
I think Dragic might be. I'm not 100% on that one. But I think if Dragic is unrestricted, man, that's a huge one for Miami to keep, number one.
Yep.
Or can he get paid at 35, whatever he is right now? Could he get one more pretty good contract for 2-3 years?
You wonder.
Really make money. But if you're Miami, I don't think you can let him go the way he played.
I honestly believe he was their MVP in the previous series. Against the Celtics. I thought he was their night in, night out, most reliable performer. Bam had the great explosive moments, but he was steady.
They had three guys. I felt like Jimmy Butler, Bam, and Dragic that were all absolutely terrific when they were on the court.
But, you know, they might be thinking, well, you know, we none had that terrific year.
Right.
And you got to figure he's going to be able to build on that. They might be thinking, but boy, I was reminded how good Dragic is. Yeah, I became a big, I filled in my application for the fan club on that one.
Oh, you got to. I mean, watching him and how I don't know. He just, you felt like he had the cojones every time out there. He wanted to take the big shot.
Yeah.
He did take the big shot. He made the big shot. You know, it was just one of those things where, I felt like, again, you forgot, like maybe because he hadn't played on the big stage. So you just didn't really watch him enough.
Yeah, I mean, because when he made the All-Star team, he was on a Phoenix team. Nobody remembers anything.
Exactly.
About.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So that's the free agent.
Well, Fred VanVleet.
Underwhelming as
yes,
a whole.
Say the least.
And I think
it is.
If you're Chicago or you're New York, I think you got to go after a Fred VanVleet. I think those are the teams to me that make the most sense. He's probably not, unless Toronto wants to give him the money and he stays, which maybe he should because it's obviously been a great spot for him. And you keep him with Lowry and Siakam and, you know, why can't they be very good again next year? Where if you go to New York, you're not going to win. If you go to Chicago and they need a point guard, maybe it takes Chicago from a non-playoff team to, you know, sneaking in as the 8th, 7th seed.
Yeah. But,
you know, you stay in Toronto, you've built a culture there. Nick Nurse loves you. The city loves you. But he's going to get paid. I mean, he's going to get paid 20 million plus easily. Fred VanVleet. He's a culture guy. He guards at a high level, tough as shit. Like just everything that's right about a team, but he can't be a number one guy.
No.
He's got to have help. He probably is ideal as your number three guy on a good team.
Right. Right, yeah. I agree. I totally agree. Well, happy for him. I've been a fan of his since I first saw him, and so I like him. That's good. Good for him.
The other big news of the week. Are you a big analytics guy? Do you consider yourself?
I respect a place for it, but you know how I feel about the three, and then you know we're going to get it to the Mr. man who has had the most nefarious effect on the. Artistry of the aesthetics of the game, in my view, ever. You are
Bob Ryan cannot be a Daryl Morey fan. Cannot.
No, I mean no, not that when you're wedded. I mean, I like balance.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the game. He has done more to emphasize that the three is the game than any individual ever, and he changed it. Daryl Morey, Tony La Russa baseball, and Daryl Morey in basketball, and you know, because we he started here. I didn't know him, but yeah, but
I didn't either. I didn't.
You know, and he's, but no, I mean, he's so what's, I want to know what he's going to do.
Yeah. So Daryl Morey, in case people don't know by now, I guess resigned is the term due to personal reasons. I'm not sure I'm completely buying that, Bob.
I don't know. No, he says
yeah, that. I don't know either, because obviously the owner, Fertitta, you know, is a guy that doesn't have a lot of patience with the Rockets. So you wonder if he had had enough. Although you got to give Morey credit, like 8 straight years in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Did a great job keeping right. them competitive.
They got to a point.
Right.
You know, they got to
a
point.
I felt like the one thing with Morey that I always felt was he never took into account the intangibles and chemistry. And he just threw guys together. And based on, again, maybe the numbers. And the numbers said, well, if we got a chance to get Westbrook to pair with Harden, you know, let's pair them together and let's bring on Dwight Howard. And I just felt like it was just kind of, he was almost playing craps every day. And sometimes,
you know, in terms of this analytics driven approach, there's a very interesting parallel in terms of a level of success reached between the Houston Rockets and the Oakland A's and Billy Beane.
Yeah.
Billy Beane couldn't get it done. And Clay, a nice little engine that could teams, you know, but playing that way, the way they did. But anyway, but now, of course, we're in a whole other world with the Friedman-esque and oh my God. Yeah, that's baseball. We'll get that later. But no, I'm not a big fan of Daryl Morey in that sense, but I have to respect, you know, he's no fool. God knows, you know, and he'll hit you with the numbers that, you know, you have to go, all right, all right, all right. But I still think that there's a place for a 2-point shot. I still think there's a place for a low post game. I still think there ought to be one. And, you know, the Rockets took an extreme this year. They went absolutely completely hog wild. Event, you know, finally with putting an NBA team out there in 2020 with the tallest guy starting at 6'7", Covington, after they finally got rid of Capella and went the other way. And you know, didn't get him where to get him.
And really a 6'4 center in PJ Tucker.
Yeah. You know, right. There's a place in the world for PJ Tucker, but you know, anyway, we can't talk about Daryl Morey and not talk about the tweet and what kind of eventual fallout within the organization and you know, how angry the NBA people are in terms of the yep. money that he cost them, you know, sure. for taking a principled stand that he ought to be, have a right as a citizen to take, but which kind of backfired, you know, in enormous way financially. For people who don't know, he is the general manager of the Rockets, who way back when tweeted a support of the Hong Kong situation, of the Hong Kong people against the communist regime, and China reacted by pulling the plug on a couple $1 billion worth of business that the NBA was doing, finally relenting in game 5 of the finals to come back and put the game on. By the way,
that kind of went up the radar. Pushback
was there was in mainland China that created that. Maybe there was some great pushback that we never heard about.
I was amazed when you told me that. That went completely under the radar to me. That occurred. So, all right. So the Houston Rockets now, they promoted from within. The general manager. They still don't have a coach. Now, how about the front runner? I guess, I don't know if this is true, but the three candidates are Jeff Van Gundy, Stephen Silas, and John Lucas, who might be the front runner.
I heard that. Well, first, I would, you know.
I have to give you the last interaction I had with John Lucas. You'll love this story. Go ahead. Give me your thoughts on John Lucas first.
I want him to, and I want the end of the story for his incredible saga, drug battled saga, you know, to end on a positive note, because he's a bright guy. And I think he's essentially a good person who obviously had a system that really had a problem staying away from the drugs. Okay. You know, I mean, I use him as right exhibit now, A, how powerful it must be to have an addiction that the career that he basically shit canned, you know, because of his addiction.
Yep.
When he's a bright guy with 2 college degrees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's trying to help people now. So he does for a living. And I root for him. I had nice breakfast in him once upon a time in Boston, you know, but way back when, and we talked about all this stuff you know,
yeah, good guy. He's been an assistant with the Rockets for the last few years. So that gives him a little bit of an inside track. I'll give you a quick story. I'll try to abbreviate it. So I'm at it's called the NBA Players Camp 2 years ago, not this past June, obviously, because it didn't take place, but the previous June, it's in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's the first year, it's all the top 100 high school players. First year I had gone to it. And I went to it because college coaches were allowed and NBA personnel was allowed as well. So I get there and all these events now, guys charge for the books and the information about the kids. And all it is like rosters and where they go to school. And it's a bunch of nothing, maybe phone numbers. They charge like $425 to each school. So Virginia had bought four of them. So they spent, do the math, $1,700 on four of these books. You needed to buy one for each coach, I believe, that was there. So I'm there. Coaches are complaining about it. I had to buy three books, blah, 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 blah. Spent, you know, $1,200. And I made it out to John Lucas Enterprises. And I'm like, huh? Why would you make it out to John Lucas Enterprises? Well, John Lucas was running the camp, okay? But again, it's an NBA player camp sponsored by the NBA. So I tweeted something out there. I said, coaches are complaining. This is quite a racket. I said, quite a racket for John Lucas.
Ooh.
I said, you know, there's 300 coaches here. Do the math times $400. John Lucas is rolling in it. So how about this? So he called me from Mike Rice's. They were down on the court. We were upstairs. All the coaches and NBA guys and media were up top. And all of a sudden, I see on my phone, Mike Rice. Mike Rice, he's down there. And I look down at the center court, down low, and John Lucas is holding the phone right next to Mike Rice. And he's yelling at me, I'm not making a dollar off this. I said, well, John, all I know is all the coaches are making the money, the checks out to John Lucas Enterprises. He said, well, I'm not making, change that tweet. So I changed it to something like, John Lucas told me he's not making any money off this. Still a hell of a racket for whoever's getting paid. So that was my last John Lucas. Actually, I might have seen him since briefly.
So did you get any further info?
I tried to reach out to the NBA Players Association to find out who the hell was getting paid off that thing.
Yeah, that's
All I know is if the checks are made out to John, my guess, and I don't have proof of this, my guess is, Bob, this is the first year, again, that happened. The NBA had no idea how much money was at stake that could be made off these books. So my guess is John Lucas never had to tell the NBA. They never would have known. And he gets that money. And it's, again, do the math, right? You're talking $400 times 300 coaches. That's a good amount. I'd like 120 grand.
I'd take that.
Right? I'll run a case for 120 grand. So I guess what I'm illustrating is John Lucas is a very smart individual, Bob.
I know he is.
Very, very smart.
I know he is. And he was the first pick of the draft in 1976. Yes. Number one pick, ladies and gentlemen, John Lucas.
Out of Maryland.
He could play this game. Yeah. And of course, you know his other great claim to fame. He was Rene Richards' doubles partner.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew he was a hell of a tennis player.
He was Rene Richards'
tennis
partner, a doubles partner.
Imagine him playing tennis.
Huh? Yes.
Yes. Change, you know, like you don't see that
good
basketball tennis combo.
He was that good. Yeah. Now, we've mentioned this before, but if it ever happens, Stephen Silas,
son of
my friend Paul.
Yep.
If he gets an NBA job, he would be the first NBA coach with whom I played Nerf ball on my knees in his living room.
that definitely will result in a story. There'll be a story in the Boston Globe.
The first NBA coach that anybody has ever played Nerf ball with on their knees in the living room.
Does that make you feel old, Bob?
Everybody in a writing fraternity.
Does that make you feel old?
No, it makes me feel good. No, I'm beyond all that. Hey, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm beyond that. I am. I know how long I covered this league.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right. So, and then we got New Orleans that I still think is a really good job.
Like, yeah, I thought they'd be flocking to want to coach, you know.
I don't know what David Griffin's doing, why he's moving so slow. You've got, you know, Stan Van Gundy, a lot of people think he's going to get it. You've heard some other young coaches' assistants be mentioned for the job. I don't know what Griff is doing over there.
Yeah.
But I feel like, why wouldn't you want to bring somebody in? The draft is now under a month away, less than a month away.
Scheduled for November 18, scheduled. And they are still, you know, hedging.
Right.
Right now, it's November 18. Even today, in the morning, I already read the paper in the morning, there's a reference to it. It's scheduled for.
Yeah, I think it'll be the 18th. I think they're going to, unless something crazy happens, I think they're going to keep it for the 18th. But to me, if you're New Orleans, you want to have a coach in place.
Yeah.
If I'm David Griffin, I want to know, all right, what type of style are you running? Because that does factor in. It should factor in at times to who you're going to draft. If you're, you know, I don't know where New Orleans is off the top of my head drafting. But, like, to me, again, if they're somewhere in that mid-first round and you're picking between two guys and Stan Van Gundy's your coach, well, first of all, you want to know personality-wise, can that kid handle Stan Van Gundy? Right? I mean, that's number one.
Seriously. Seriously, so
I'd like to see both of the Van Gundys back in. So,
well, I don't want Jeff back in.
You want him because you want to listen to him.
Yeah.
I like that about Stan, too. But they're great personalities to have back on the sidelines.
I know. But I've felt this way for years. I said that he's serving a larger and more constituency than one little – I know.
I think you're right.
He proved he can still coach when he did with that USA team without last year. He certainly
I'd like to have, you know, Houston and New Orleans and have Jeff versus Stan. I think that would be fun too, to have the Van Gundy against each other.
Yes, it would. Right? Oh boy.
I mean, they're two, again, like we said, they're great to listen to, but I think they also would add something to a league that, you know, again, doesn't lack for entertainment and drama, but I think they'd add to it. They'd add to it. And I'd like to see Jeff back in because it's been so long.
Oh, it's like, it's 13 years, I think.
It's amazing. You don't see that very often.
Dick Vermeil did it in football with a big gap and got away with it.
He retired, though, didn't he? Didn't Vermeil retire or no?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what he was doing in that interim. But was he doing any broadcast? I don't know. I don't remember. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't either.
Anyway, you know, he came back and did it. But Jeff, the thing is, Jeff proved last year he still got the chops. Yeah. I knew know that. I know. But I would miss him. I would, you know. But hey, you know, whatever makes you happy. I know we're going to get to the draft, of course, but just one thought crossed my head here when you mentioned the draft. And what's your biggest curiosity? I know what mine is about the first round.
Probably who goes number one, Bob. I think it's as wide open as it's been, and you've got major question marks with all these guys that could go number one. LaMelo Ball, we've gone through it a little bit, but again, the lack of coaching, the lack of discipline, not an unbelievable athlete, but man, he can pass the ball, see the floor. Not a great shooter either. Terrible form, kind of like his brother Lonzo. You've got Anthony Edwards out of Georgia, who shot 40 from the field and under 30 from three, and his team lost just about every game he played last year. And then you've got James Wiseman, who played three games, 7-footer, long, talented, but a lot of people question, number one, his motor, how tough he is. And number two, do you draft a 7-footer with the number one pick with the way the game is right now? So I would say
that's my curiosity. Who goes for James Wiseman, given the trend of basketball? Who goes for him? Now I'm thinking, I have no idea. You've seen him, I haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was hoping to see him much this year, but I didn't. In fact, he was going to come to UConn. I was going to go to the game. You know, there was no game. Okay.
Minnesota's got the number one pick, Bob. Minnesota, which already has Carl Anthony Towns.
Yeah. To project him into a facsimile of Anthony Davis?
No, zero.
Okay.
Zero. Not that. Absolutely zero.
That's why I want to know. I don't know. Okay.
He will not be Anthony Davis.
That's my question.
Skill-wise, he can't be Anthony Davis on the offensive end. He's just not – that's not him.
Right.
He can handle it like that. He can't shoot it like that. He's more – probably more comparable to DeAndre Ayton than he is Anthony Davis. Right. And I actually think Ayton is more talented from an offensive skills standpoint. So, but I listen, I like Wiseman. I don't love him. I don't love Edwards. I don't love LaMelo.
No.
Yeah.
Obi Toppin probably goes like four. I like him. I think they're all about the same. And in an ordinary draft, you'd have them all in that 5 to 10 range. And yeah. say, all right, I like him. I like him at five, but I don't like him at one. So I think it's honestly a curse right now. If you're Gerson Rosas, who's got the number one pick, just got the job as the GM of the Timberwolves, I think it's a curse to have the number one pick right now.
No, well, back the year when Bennett was number one, and, you know, look at that. That was one of those years. And
got Chris Grant fired.
Look what happened.
They got Chris Grant fired in Cleveland because he took Anthony Bennett from a group that, again, there was probably no real win-win, but he took the lose-lose there, which was Anthony Bennett, who's now not even in the league. So we'll focus. I mean, again, what are we at now? We're at the 21st. Yeah, next week we'll start doing a little bit more of the draft. I'm sure we'll have a couple of these jobs that'll be filled by then. And listen, we know there'll be more news because there always is with the NBA. Greg Marshall. Maybe we'll have a decision on Greg Marshall by then.
Yeah, and then if not, all else fails, I'll wheel about the three.
Yeah, you. I mean, listen,
I'll scream about the three. You know, that'll take us a few.
Do that
minutes.
Every week. We can do that. Every week. All right. Well, listen, appreciate it, Bob. We'll talk next week. Have a good weekend.
Okay, Jeff.